You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Turn one, exploration, turn these fields, crop rotation, sifting meadows, elves are claiming, bajuka, bog drain, jogged away, then we cast our way into the north, dark depths abound, the legend scores of merit lage, in its slumber, valor could awaken, clash of thunder, the mountains crumble into rubble, flagstones split the ground asunder, plains arise, tectonic tumbler, evolving wilds, fill the bunkers, we venture to the tabernacle, where reliquary knights do battle with riders from the avalanches, who destroy plant farms, trees, and ranches, the journey seeking the Mox Diamond, a piece so rare, no one could find a kaleidoscope of ancient magic to fuel their whole world demographic. The secret to its potent mana derives from the lands that have been abandoned, where Obosh is ne'er a companion, a demon, horror, nightmare, a hellion. Abruptly the blood moon arises, simian spirits pray it guides them to the legendary eye of Ugin that harbors alien intruders, hopes of blind eternities, warp worlds irreversibly, except Caracas, the lone safe haven where legends unite to fight to save them. They topple to the land of Thraven to break the vault where Hellas stayed in, releasing demons, plagues, and angels sworn to fend off a disdainful, but a demon's contract's unfulfilled with a chain-veiled mage who's been instilled with everlasting youth and power, quakes the dead in a field of flowers where grass glows a bright green aura that shimmers off the lotus cobras who slither in a forbidden orchard where the demon wrestles holy torture. The grotto gathers oath of druids, nine hermits who are nature fluent to call forth escape shift to magma and banish the demon in a glacial chasm, but the heat that they just seal the ground melts the age-old ice that entraps the bound, an avatar so diabolic its reign of terror is catastrophic. Vespians have told the tale of an avatar glow with molded scales who blocks the sun and all its light, engulfing worlds in eternal night, where prairies are turned into Vesuvas, the demon shape shifts into Garuda, a kraken horror so infernal, some flowers bend to become nocturnal, changelings rampage on the islands, waves cascade down on the highlands, the dryad arbors drown in silence, but the willows still burn in defiance, the flames contain the evil minion, whose tentacles splash down from the deepness and bash away the punishing fire, cast by the trackers who will not tire, they fight to their death just like the Abzan, the rhinos tease the mile of python, waked its way up on the shore where it scored then baked by a flash drip or which burst up from the sand below, from the lonely sandbar which split and throws a royal that spins a tornado that flings large sharks across its airflow. Garuda's pulled into a whirlpool by four so strong Jedi's control through the demon sealed down in the ocean as the forest morphs in slow motion. Yavimaya's cradle gathers the vegetation left in tatters, revitalizes all its essence with misty colors effervescent. Rain falls on the vast horizon where Vasa waves her magic bident, imprisoning the demon giant within the ties forever. Have a silent
What's the feel? What it do?
Hello and welcome to Eternal Turtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me as always, actually both Phils are here. Phil, Phil, how's it going, guys?
It's always great to be with another Phil. You know, that's how you know you're off to a good start.
Yeah, so we've got
We're like the Mighty Ducks, Phil Blackman, Phils fly together.
Force of Phil is here, and we have Phil Nguyen. So, Phil Nguyen, we got you on
I want to hear Force of Phil's intro, though, you know? Need to have him introduce himself each time.
Everybody who's watching on YouTube, go for the audio version of this. We're going to play the pre-modern hip hop track that Phil actually commissioned me for.
I
name 160 cards.
Maybe we'll actually put that on at the end of the YouTube cast too. After the thanks for watching, I'll throw that up there too.
Yeah, and you can't skip to the end to enjoy that tasty little those beats. You know, you have to suffer through us conversing, and then you get something good.
Much like pre-modern, you know.
Exactly.
It's like playing stasis. You're just gonna have to wait it out and see what happens. You can't just concede. Yeah,
the waiting is the best part.
So obviously we have you on today because we want to talk about a couple of things. One, just talk about content creation and whatnot, but beyond that, I want to talk about banding, because that's something to me at least is I'm relatively new to the concept of banding the newsletter, and it's super cool to me. I actually have here some Duelist magazines from back in the day.
I thought you were about to like show printed copies. Like you were that big of a fan. Great. Like I have printed out each printed and out. Bound them and laminated them.
Yeah, we've added some bad Star Wars ads to the back.
Yeah.
Taken the Banning newsletter and syndicated it, and it's coming to cable yeah. near you.
We will be hand delivering it. Yeah. But yeah, we want to talk about banding. We're going to talk about pre-modern as well. And I kind of just want to talk about content creation as a whole. So first off, let's just get right into banding. Phil, tell the uninitiated what banding is.
Yeah, it's actually kind of amazing you brought up those old copies of Duelist, because that is like kind of partially the inspiration. But basically, banding is kind of like a semi-monthly, sometimes twice a month email newsletter that I send out. It's completely free. It's hosted through Substack. And so you can sign up for that. I'm sure we can drop links in the show notes or what have
you. They'll be down below. Yeah.
Yeah. But basically, I like to write about pre-modern. That's kind of like the format of choice for me over the last few years. And so for me, entering the format and partaking in it, it just seemed like there's a lot of great content out there, but not a good way to organize it all together into one place. And for those of you not familiar with pre-modern, it's a format that has like a fixed card pool that's essentially from fourth edition to Scourge. So essentially like kind of all the old frame cards, except for kind of like your old school sets. And so it's a pretty active community from all around the world. There's a lot of webcam games, and there's starting to be a lot of in-person games at like kind of like side events at major conventions. Like there was some at Eternal Weekend, some of the other larger events as well. You know, essentially, I wanted to, like I said, kind of gather all the content into one good place, and also have an avenue to kind of create my own content as well. Because, you know, I grew up reading Scry and Inquest. Never actually got Duelist, but I got the other two. And so, you know, I just felt like it was kind of a nice callback, essentially.
Yeah, aesthetically speaking, it has like very much like the Scry Duelist feel to Scry and Inquest feel to it. And the articles are so fun. It's just like, to me, like that callback to like how we used to consume Magic content is just so, so fascinating and really fun to me. And sort of what, when I started doing the blog and stuff like that, up to now doing, you know, web stuff that was never imagined, you know, when we started consuming Magic content, to me, like that was one of my first things to do is like, okay, you know, like pick those classic, you know, like the deck deconstruction or like how to fix a deck, or talk about, you know, this is an article about Pro Tour Paris and the Cadaverous Bloom matchup, you know? So, I mean, this is like right in that wheelhouse because it's of that era. And I think that's the great thing about banding is it like, it pulls that nostalgia perfectly for what is kind of a current, you know, it's a current way to play the game, but it pulls on that nostalgia.
Yeah, I think that's true. And honestly, like I, back in the day, I used to write this like daily email newsletter kind of for fun. It was called the Daily Water Cooler. I did it for like about 5 years, where like pretty much every morning I'd wake up really early and summarize the news and send it out to people. At its peak, it had like 10,000 subscribers who just kind of like read it and heard about it through word of mouth. But so for me, writing newsletters has always been like kind of like this passion of mine. And in general, like I think that there's a lot of great Magic content out there. Like obviously you guys are one of the best podcasts out there, but there's a lot of like great YouTube video content producers, and there's like a decent amount of blogs as well. But in general, like I kind of felt like newsletters was kind of this missing component. At least I don't see that many. I'm sure there's a lot of great ones out there, and listeners are more than welcome to send them my way. But I think that was like kind of the big thing for me. And in general, like pre-modern does have a lot of younger audiences, but it does skew older. And like a lot of people just don't have the time to, you know, sit down and watch videos as much anymore. Like podcasts are great because you can listen to them and like do gardening or commuting or whatever you have, or even during work. But I felt like this kind of, like you said, this slower medium of digestible content kind of like resonated with a lot of people.
Yeah. And one confession I always make to people when they ask me about content and what how I consume it is I almost do not, I do most of my content through reading, because once I've produced a video, I'm kind of over watching it, and I'm not a fan of watching gameplay content. I never have been, which is why our podcast is, you know, even the video part is more of the, like, you can just listen to it, and there, you know, every now and again we'll pop cards up to show people what we're talking about if they're watching the video, but I try and make it as easily watchable, or at least easily consumable as possible, in a way that I would want to listen to it. But as far as the way I like to take in content, it's through reading. I prefer to be able to, like, focus in, come back to it when I want to. You know, I have the attention span of a sugared up 9-year old. You know, I'm drinking Mountain Dew Code Red, for God's sakes. Like, you know, I my ADHD demands that I read my content.
Yeah, you guys need to get sponsored, though, because, like, you know, I was talking about how I grew up reading Inquest and Scry, and Inquest would always talk about that chocolate drink Yoo-hoo, and, like, whenever I see it at, like, a bodega, I just, like, instantly think of that magazine now. So you guys need to get, like,
we get, like, Yerba Mate and Mountain Dew to sponsor us.
I think we should reach out to Yoo-hoo, is what I'm hearing. Podcast. I think Yoo-hoo is probably our best target.
When Yoo-hoo is a callback to Warp Tour back in the day. They had, like, a booth at Warp Tour. It'd be like August, the heat of August, like in the parking lot of a convention center. And, like, you know, as a broke, like, 19-year-old kid, I didn't have any money because I spent all on magic cards, and I spent like $40 to go to this concert. I'd be outside all day, and they're like, no free drinks except for there's this tent where you can, like, drink Yoo-hoo, and, like, Yoo-hoo in the summer sun, you would think, gross, that's so disgusting, why would you want to do that to yourself? But it's actually quite refreshing.
See, you're already like mastering the pitch, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to do a quick search here. Well, normally milk or chocolate milk in intense heat, not great. True or false, milk is the first ingredient in Yoo-hoo.
Oh, false. False. There's no milk in Yoo-hoo.
Is it water or what?
It's water.
It's water, yeah.
Yeah,
there's no milk in Yoo-hoo.
It's really chocolate water, which
it's like, it's basically Faygo, but like pre-Faygo. It's before the Insane Clown Posse made Faygo cool.
If anybody were to sum up what Eternal Dirtles is a podcast, they were like, what's it like? They'd be like, it's like the chocolate water of podcasts.
Perfect.
Phil, I was curious, when you first had the idea to start the newsletter, it stemmed back, I assume, that you, A, you recognized that there wasn't a lot of pre-modern content out there, so it was just wide open, I would think. Was that true? And then before even getting there, you've been a legacy player for as long as I've known you. What was the initial spark that got you into not only intrigued in pre-modern, but then to really effectively become the format's spokesman? You know, like, I feel like anytime I talk to anybody about pre-modern, the first thing that comes to mind is your name. It's synonymous at this point, at least in the communities that I roll in, you know?
It's very nice for you to call me a spokesperson, because, like, I consider myself like a pre-modern troll, in that I'm just crawling around Twitter waiting for someone to post like a random card from Onslaught being like, man, I wish I could play this card. And then I'll just kind of like creep in the comments and be like, but you can.
Post up over here, over here, I suppose, a tweet from you today, which is, the only Mr. Beast I recognize is Ravenous Bela.
Yeah.
I
add a second portion to my question, which is, how many times have you trolled that it's been taken seriously and affected both the discussion at large amongst the community, format transitions, or like how pricing of cards, like the legitimate moving of a market?
Yeah, that's the goal every day on Twitter. You know, I've evolved from Legacy into the true game of Magic the Gathering, which is just Twitter. Yeah, I mean, just to get back to the original question, I mean, like, when I first started in pre-modern, it was the end of 2018, and there's like, in pre-modern, there's like three great essentially podcasts. Like, there's the Pre-Modcast, All Things Considered, and Monster of the Week. Like, they're great podcasts, they've been around for a long time, and they cover pre-modern. So those are like the three main content creators. But then there's also a lot of YouTube channels as well, like Cloud Goat Ranger and OS Curdape. And so, like, they had like a decent amount of content, but it was all kind of scattered around. The pre-modern community is mostly on Discord and Facebook, and like a little bit on Twitter. And so my goal with banding was essentially to kind of aggregate all these things together, because honestly, like, I'm like kind of at the age where I still use Discord, but I still find it very chaotic. Like, someone will post a link and it'll literally like disappear in like 5 minutes, you know? And you know, I think that's kind of a shame. Like, sometimes people post like this amazing league or video that they spent hours creating, and And then someone's like, I think we should ban Sly. And then like the entire chat just like explodes and you'll never see that content again.
Normally, you know, I think we should allow the Zendikar fetch lands into the
floor. Yeah,
that's exactly what does it. Yeah.
There are definitely a few hot button topics. And so like, you know, that was kind of my goal, is just to kind of aggregate everything together. To be honest, like I think there might be an opportunity in Legacy too. Like there's a ton of content creators right now. It's kind of funny, but like at least on Facebook, I feel like the Leaving a Legacy Facebook group is like the de facto Legacy group on Facebook. And I could be wrong.
They don't even exist anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
we are now like the longest running Legacy podcast.
Yeah.
Although if everybody is still using their group on Facebook, I guess then their name lived up to itself.
Yeah. It's self-fulfilling. Yeah. And then obviously like the Legacy community on Twitter is great too. Like people are posting amazing things, but I do feel like it's kind of like scattered into Discord now. Like no one uses the source anymore. I don't think.
Yeah. Nate does. So,
just as his own personal diary, as his brewing thoughts. But yeah, so I just feel like, you know, there's so many great content creators out there, and sometimes it can get easy to get lost in the noise. And so that was kind of one of the goals of the newsletter. Like you said, I used to play a lot of Legacy, and I still keep up with Legacy quite a bit. I don't know how many people know, but I have newborn twins, and so I haven't been able to play Magic in a little bit.
Congratulations.
Thanks. Yeah, they're identical girls. So it's a lot.
It's going to be way easier to teach them pre-modern when they have an opponent at all times.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I'm just going to give them two decks, put them in a corner, and then they'll, you know, do mirror matches for hours.
Are two wolves and you feed one Sly and one Stasis, which wolf survives?
I just imagine that you give them both tricks and they're just donating it back and forth every turn.
See, that teaches good lessons though. You know, it's all about like sharing and like resource management. So those are good lessons.
Kai was really designing for fatherhood.
So yeah, like I still love Legacy. Honestly, even though I'm like these days known more for pre-modern, I kind of view Legacy and pre-modern as complementary. Legacy, I just like embrace the chaos now. You know, like when people are like stickers, inventions, universes beyond, like I don't really care. Like it's awesome. It's amazing. Jamming into the decks, it's great. Because, you know, like you used to be like, oh, Legacy is for this place for like, I have a set vision of set cards that I want to use forever. And like, that's just like not the reality anymore in a lot of cases. Yeah. But, you know, pre-modern has kind of like filled that hole in a way where I'm like, okay, I can, like, I haven't, you know, as a confession, I haven't actually played a game of pre-modern since the twins were born in October. Like, I still keep up with it quite a bit, obviously, but, you know, hopefully I'll be going to the New York City meetup soon. But anyway, I can like return back at any moment, and like some things will have changed. I can still like kind of use the same decks for the most part, and that part is pretty nice.
That is the beautiful thing about those like closed off eternal formats, old school being the same kind of way, where you can just be like, okay, well, like my deck will not, you know, assuming there are no bannings, which rarely happen, sometimes unbannings happen, you know, you can go back with the same deck and you still have a pretty good idea of what the metagame is going to look like.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, just to wrap up, like how I kind of shift a lot of my attention to pre-modern is kind of similar to you guys. I really love to brew. I like making like weird decks that have cool synergies and like unexpected cards. Like for the longest time in Legacy, I was trying to make Griffin Canyon work, which like it's actually gotten a lot of new toys recently, which has been very exciting.
It's Legacy playable now.
Mirren Safehouse came out. And when Mirren Safehouse came out in the most recent set, I go to Twitter, everybody's like Mirren Safehouse, and the only thing that shows up is pictures of you and Griffin Cannon. And that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
just all the way down my feed.
And that's when you closed and deleted the app and then reinstalled it like 3 weeks later. You're like, I can't deal with this.
That was the moment where I was like, finally, I actually want to be on the app.
there's no pictures of content. no Murktide regions or expressive iteration. This is what we care about. But yeah, honestly, like I love to brew, and before pre-modern I actually got into old school. And old school I really like. It was slightly before my time. I started in Ice Age, but the problem, it's not really a problem, but it is a challenge with old school, is that like prices of cards increased a lot in the last few years. They have declined a little bit, but it's really hard for me to like brew when like, you know, a card is like $40. And so that was like kind of like one issue. And then with Legacy, I think it's still possible to brew. I think it's still really hard. Like cards are just so powerful these days. And I don't want to get into a ban discussion or anything, because I don't think anything is like ban worthy, but cards like Brazen Bar and, you know, cards that are just very flexible in removal, prismatic ending, like make like random brew cards, like kind of easy to ignore. Like I remember when I started playing Magic, like no one played main deck enchantment or artifact removal, except for like a Council's Judgment. And, you know, that was like basically it. And so if you landed like, you know, a chalice and then you landed like four drop, people would be like, oh, damn. Like, you know, I'm not going to be able to.
I can't express to you how many conversations I was in back when Council's Judgment was really the only answer to non-creature permanents, where as a longtime Miracles guy, I had two Council's Judgment in my deck. And if you saw a Sylvan Library on the stack, you snap pitched whatever blue card you had to it. It just, if that thing touched the table, game over. Yeah. It was just game over. It was lights out. And now it's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. No, I mean, even like that, it feels like forever ago, but if we looked back, it'd probably be only be like 2 years or maybe 1 year. But like Clothis, like the god Destiny or whatever, like that card was like so cool. It was like eating of graveyards and stuff. And now like people are like, oh, indestructible thing. Like I don't really even care. Like,
yeah,
easily.
Just exile it.
Yeah. So anyway, like I just felt like it was a lot harder to brew. The pace of cards that were being released was accelerating as well. And so I'd be like, oh, I can't wait to brew this card. And the new set would release. And I was like, oh, I need to brew with this card and buy this as well. And I just had this backlog of all these like really spicy cards, but I just like did not have the time to brew them all together. And so it kind of got a little exhausting. And so now I just kind of focus mostly on like lands and depths. And, you know, it's not as spicy, but it's easier for me to manage.
Well, luckily that deck is constantly evolving too. Like I feel like with every new set that gets powerful, like any powerful new land, it can somehow find its way into those lists. And you were the first
safe
person,
house Mutiful and Griffin Canyon, obviously.
Phil was also, when right as MH2 came out, Phil was also the first player to just annihilate me with Urza Saga's Thespian's Stage copy at Maker Basic, that. And then just make infinite tokens forever. And it was like, all right, well, I'm dead. I'm definitely dead.
That was the event in which I feel like every 30 minutes we'd have to like ask the room. It was like, are we sure this is how it works? Like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be like, so you can make another copy of the saga and still fetch for like an artifact? That's like nuts. Anyway, yeah, I mean, lands is always evolving, and so it's kind of been my go-to deck for a while now, so that's what I'm kind of sticking with.
So I recently, when you were talking about it becomes more difficult to brew, I find that when I try and attack a current Legacy metagame, a lot of the time the tools that I end up finding are things that we'll talk about on the cast. And then Zach will routinely be like, oh, you just brewed a Pioneer deck. Oh, you just brewed a pre-modern deck. You know, because like because you're right. Like the things are so strong and so powerful now that like the incidental ways to navigate through those types of like, and a recent example was, I was like, man, Expressive Iteration is a problem. Everybody has trouble combating that card. I was like, I'm going to play Misinformation. I'm going to splash black. And I'm just going to blank your whole EI. Good luck with your three lands that you're flipping over. You're definitely hitting your land drop. And then I was like, wait, if we're on Misinformation, I just want to be on Foreshadow and hit your best card that I just put back on top and draw all the cards. And then I'm like brewing like this 8 predict Misinformation deck.
Yes.
And I'm just like, we are all in tune where we're like, this is sweet. This is awesome. And it will win 0 games in Legacy. But now I'm like, well, now I got to just play this over in pre-modern because I can't let this go. I own 4 Misinformation now.
I definitely have a deck similar like that. I haven't sleeved it up in pre-modern, but I think just like being able to predict and like Foreshadow and like Portent, I feel like those are all force of fill cards in one. So
dude, every time you share a deck list and it only has 3 predict in it, I'm always I'm the meme that's just like, no, get that 4th copy in there.
I think my pet card in the format is Stunted Growth. We're like
Stunted Growth,
that's like, yeah, 5 mana green spell that like puts 3 cards back on top of your opponent's deck that like,
oh, from their hand, right?
Yeah, from their hand, yeah. And I've just never been able to make it work, but I had it done to me once during Ice Age Block 30 years ago, and I'm like, I never recovered.
Green Mind Twist.
Yeah, but, like Stunted Growth, Plow Under.
You were talking about old school to pre-modern, and I wanted to bring up a point about pre-modern for people that aren't aware. One of the things that I like about pre-modern that you don't tend to get in old school is the like willingness to like kind of conform to whatever the newest printing is. It's like whatever you use to play is fine, you know, up to and including gold border cards. And I think that that's one of the things that makes the format super approachable, is it's like there's not like a guy that's like, you can only use unlimited cards at best, you know, like then that's how, like, I love old school, it's so much fun. But like the like weird elitism that comes comes from like old school players. They're like, you can't use that Mirage Disenchant. Like, that's not part of the part of our game. It's like, man, just can we just play Magic? Like, I just want to play. I just want to have fun and play the game. And I think that whoever, you know, I forget who created pre-modern, but like, I think that was a feeling that they were feeling too when they created the rules of the format and allowed any printing of a card to be legal in the format.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we're talking to the creator of pre-modern.
Yeah, I'm gonna just take full credit for it. Kind of invented by this guy Martin Berlin, who still is pretty active in the community. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it is a pretty open community in terms of allowing reprints. Pretty much 99% of events and anything you go to will allow gold border cards too, which really helps with affordability of a lot of cards. You still get certain people who would definitely prefer you play like the pre-modern set cards. But for the most part, like, the community is pretty open to it, which I think is great in terms of affordability. Like, you know, obviously, like, you had cons fetches, I think are the allied fetches, right? Yeah. Are like much more affordable than the Onslaught ones. And it's good. Like, you know, the thing about pre-modern is too, is that like, I feel like because the card pool is fixed, for the most part, the card prices only go down as they're reprinted. Like, Dominaria Remastered had like a ton of printings that lowered the price of certain things. Like, they reprinted like everything, right? Like Birds of Paradise, Wrath of God, Howling Mine, like all these amazing pre-modern staples. And so like, I think that's kind of nice in that the format just kind of gets cheaper as time goes on, unless new printings cause like a pre-modern card to spike. Like, you know, everyone's like trying to pick up like foil predicts now or whatever. Yeah. But other than that, yeah.
We've been on it the whole time.
I know.
We never left.
You know, it's funny. Predict literally is my favorite Magic card. And I had a set of, or I still do, a set of foil English ones from Odyssey. And I loved it so much that I got another set of foil Japanese ones just because I'm just like, this is like the most beautiful card. And it's just so flavorful. It's like a fun card.
Yeah, the Rebecca Guyart is just amazing.
Yeah, it's really nice.
So I just wanted to tap in on, for because the format is fixed, do you have any, particularly with banding with your newsletter, do you have any sense of like, how, like, do you feel that the community has a lot of space to evolve and grow? Like, as more players get interested in the format, particularly as like Legacy keeps rotating, if you will, with new cards coming out and then pushing old ones out that are no longer playable, that as people gravitate towards, I'm very much in that camp, right? As like somebody who's gradually getting into the format because of that, like, because I literally want to play things like Misinformation and Foreshadow that like, but because the format is fixed, do you run into any sense of like, it's difficult to actually grow in terms of like competitive environments where like it shows up at Eternal Weekend and like that, because the format can only churn within the pool of cards that exist already, that at some point it's really just churning through different solved games. Is that evolution of a format different or tough to navigate compared to formats that are getting new cards that are effectively rotating a format?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's complicated because, you know, it is often people have a misconception that because it's a fixed card pool that the format's already solved. And I think that's not really been the case. Since I've been playing since the end of 2018, basically every couple months, there's like kind of a new top deck that people are calling for bans for. Like when I started, like Standstill and Goblins were kind of the top deck and people were like, we need a ban Goblin Blackie or Standstill. And then it was Phyrexian Devourer combo. And then it was Elves. And then it was Stifle Knot a couple months ago. And now it's like Parfait. So it's such a big pool of cards that perhaps not everything has been discovered yet. And perhaps the pool of cards is so big that we kind of like operate in this cycle where, like, you know, Phyrexian Dreadnought might be a really good deck at the moment, that people have enough cards to adjust their sideboards to address it, and then it'll go back down.
So it's in a similar space of like, it's similar to chess in that even though everything is fixed, every time two top players sit down, by the ninth move, it's a brand new game.
Yeah, and I'd say it's similar to chess in that Netflix has been approaching me about like a Queen's Gambit style documentary about myself. So it's very similar in that way as well.
Taylor Joy is supposed to play you, right?
I actually, I've heard about it. I reached out to audition for Borgov or the equivalent, which is just Kai. Yeah, it's just playing Kai Bud.
Yeah, and literally it'll just be in Game Storia. It's just like in the back. Chris Benucci as the director and videographer. So in general, like I think that like the format has been adjusting a lot. What's interesting is over the last year or so, there's been a lot of new players entering the format, which has been great because they've kind of introduced new ideas and challenged old assumptions, basically. Like for a while, like pre-modern was like sort of like a casual format, I guess. Like it was definitely competitive in that like people wanted to win and still have fun. But as there are more, you know, sharp minds entering the format, they've started to make changes. So like, for example, when I first started, like blue-black Stifle Knot was considered the best variant of the Stifle Knot combo. And then recently it's been like the mono blue version. And then like that was like tearing up all the leagues and all the monthly events. And then like blue white Stifle Knot now is like more powerful, that some might argue. And so I don't know. I think it's just interesting. Like, you know, another thing is that when I first started, the deck Parfait was really just a brew. And then Rafael Caron, who is like the original inventor of Parfait and Vintage, started playing the format and like kind of ported it over to pre-modern. And it started to do really well. Some other established players also picked it up. And then also Rich Shea, another like longtime Vintage player, has been playing the format a lot and kind of like further refined it. And now it's like considered a tier one deck. So like this is a deck that literally didn't exist like 1 or 2 years ago. And so it's kind of amazing just to see the different changes that have happened.
Yeah. And you would say that like from that aspect, because like as somebody who like you enjoys brewing very, very much, would you say that in this format before Planeswalkers were introduced to the game and all of these things, for those who didn't know, pre-modern doesn't have Planeswalkers in it, that
just you and your opponent,
similarly for players that long to have that that prior experience being effective in a way where it's tough to do so in Legacy now, unless it's its own engine, that is that something that is steeped into the community? Like are most players able, like in that space, or are you also unique to that format, and that like you're one of like the top brewers that people will look to for different deck lists, and then people iterate on that? Is the format like a bunch of brewers all coming and attacking it at once, or would you say that it's big enough now that there's a competitive scene, and then there's brewers that kind of help churn the format?
I think definitely both. And it's really a wide spectrum of brewing. Like I'm probably on the more like casual janky side of brewing, in that like my goal is essentially to make like a tier two deck at best. Like if I could do that, that's amazing. But there's definitely people who take it to spicier levels. Like again, like Rafael Caron, I actually played against him and he had a banding deck that he played against me and I lost. And so like there's like people who like brews like some crazy stuff. People like me who kind of try to brew like competitive, but not like super straightforward tier one strategies. And then there are people who choose to refine existing decks by replacing and tinkering with certain cards. What I think is interesting about pre-modern is that even though it's kind of like a mix of like competitive and casual, because it started off casually, right? And then like a lot of people have entered who are trying to build the best deck or do the best they can, because there are a lot of more in-person events. And so it's still like a good mix of all of it. Like, for example, if I enter in like in one of the monthly webcam tournaments that's organized through Facebook, it's usually 6 matches and probably like half of them are like established decks. And then the other half can be just like off the wall brews. And I think that's actually very healthy for the metagame, because in general, like a lot of people consider like Sly, they consider Parfait, Dreadnought, decks like that, and maybe Goblins, like kind of like the best decks. And if everyone played those decks, then like the format would kind of like, you know, kind of revolve around those. But because so many people just kind of play their pet decks or brews, it makes the format so wide that like these top decks can't prepare for everything.
Yeah.
And so it kind of like, I guess, like hinders their top performance. I guess they're not as efficient as they could be because they can't really focus on just the top decks. There's such a wide, like long tail of like other nonsense that people are playing.
I remember I was playing in one of the monthly events, doing really well with Sly. And I think, I want to say it was Aaron Dix, I'm not positive, just whipped out a Pariah onto my Jackal Pup. And then Treacherous linked it when I was tapped out. I was like, whatever, I don't care about Pariah, I'm just gonna attack you. And then Treacherous linked it, killed me with pain lands. Like, and there was nothing I could do to get the creature off the board. I already it was amazing. I was like, okay, well, I could have never prepared for this, and it's a deck that like completely stops one of the best decks in the format.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like I think it's like a pretty good balance right now. Like honestly, it depends on what type of event you're going to. Like LobsterCon or basically the North American Pre-Modern Champs is coming up later this year, and like the amount of brews that you'll see there is probably gonna be a lot less. But, you know, like in a casual monthly or like a meetup, it'll probably be like a healthy mix of like spicy brews and like competitive decks, basically.
Bill Four, is there like part of your newsletter, is there a place to go that has all of like the top pre-modern events schedule coming up? There's going to be monthlies everywhere. There's going to be casual events everywhere. Is there like a place to go where it's like, oh, the next big like Grand Prix-esque pre-modern event is coming up this time and I'm going to prepare for that? Is there a place for that, or is Banding have that as part of his deal?
So the newsletter at the end of the newsletter, I kind of like try to capture the big events that are coming up, and I list them there from all across the world, so people can kind of have a heads up about where to play. And then I also wrote this like intro to pre-modern guide that is like several pages long, and we can drop that in the show notes as well. But basically, I try to list out across the world and in the U.S. like the different states and localities that have pre-modern communities, so it's like easy to find them and play. Because you know, one of my goals is to make resources so that people who are interested in pre-modern or just want to learn more can have that info. And so this pre-modern guide has like, obviously it has like kind of the rules, but it also talks about like the different decks that exist, the different tiers, like how much it costs to build them. If you want to include like world championship cards or modern frame cards, it also has like instructions on how to set up like webcam games and stuff like that. And that's kind of the nice thing about pre-modern in that, you know, like I said, it's a fixed set, a fixed card pool format. And so like a lot of the content that you create is more or less evergreen. And so like, I'm fine like spending hours like creating this because I know that a year, 2 year, 3 years from now, it'll still be like pretty relevant.
Yeah.
Whereas like if I wrote like a lands guide right now, like it'll be awesome. Maybe I'm not like that great of a lands player, so maybe it won't be, but it like, honestly, like the next set Lord of the Rings will come out and like the ring will like destroy all lands or something. And yeah, I'll just be like, dude, okay,
you know that Mordor is just going to be a four of in lands for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm already cutting out my dark depths. I'm going to start selling them now because I think Mordor will just create like a 40-40 or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's the challenge. Well, I guess that's the benefit and the challenge of content creation for like a format like Legacy, right? Like you guys, like for instance, there was a recent Banning, right? That's like a lot of like content literally that you can talk about.
Yeah. The content we produced that Sunday was invalidated on Monday. It was pretty funny. We were like talking about, I think we mentioned the word expressive iteration in our Monday and like our Monday drop 7 or 8 times, specifically expressive iteration. It was like by the time that got posted, like it had only been relevant for maybe 40 minutes.
Phil, I was really high on misinformation blowing out EI, even though I never got to do it. I was like, that's it. We solved it. And then Watsi was like, actually, we're going to solve it.
Well, I want to say, Phil, it's a noble pursuit to you know, sort of aggregate all of this information into one spot. And I think it's awesome that you're doing it in pre-modern. And I really wish that we had that in other formats, in Legacy and Pioneer and, you know, Standard. You know, I wish that there was a place to go that was like that for all the other formats. So if anyone out there is listening and thinking, man, I could fill that, it would be cool to fill that niche. There you go. You've got your content creation node right there. It's like, start work. Yeah. Just copy Phil.
I'll start franchising out or licensing out the brand name if anyone wants to be under the umbrella. So
what would you even call the Legacy version of Banding? It would have to be like first
pirate stomping in a stomp or something. Yeah, that was the OG
teamwork upkeep.
I always thought I was like, I'm pretty good. I'm a pretty good troll. And then once pirate stomping happened, I was like, I'm totally out of my league. I'm not equipped.
I mean, when we were talking earlier about like market moving memes and whatnot, like pirate/Popeye Stompy was such a wonderful time to be in the Legacy community, because I feel honestly like I don't know how many people remember it, but it was just like, you know, it was one of those Ixalan sets, and there's that, what was that card called, like
Siren Storm Tamer, there was a counter spell, and then there was also a flicker.
It just flickered, and like I think if it was like a pirate, you also got to draw a card or something like that. Anyway, it was like this rumor came out that there was like this crazy pirate deck that was like going 4-0 in MTGO leagues and then dropping to for secrecy purposes, so they're list wouldn't be published. And so everyone was just like trying to piece this deck together. And everyone was like, okay, maybe it's these cards. And then there's like crazy Mercadian pirates.
Yeah, Rashidun like, Cutpurse, Rashidun Brigand.
Yeah, they all started spiking. I remember I was like sold because Mercadian is my favorite set. And so I have Pirate Stompy in foil Japanese, and like the cards are like beautiful. I've actually brought it to Game Storia before.
Mercadian Mask foils are the most gorgeous pieces of cardboard. Yeah.
I think that was the like sort of watershed moment for like, you can just make any deck with Ancient Tombs and Chalice of the Void and it will basically work. You can win with a ham sandwich in this particular instance. The ham sandwich just was a Rashidun Cutpurse.
Yeah.
Well, I remember when the Pirate Stompy deck was playing Counterbalance, they were like, we're playing Ancient Tomb and 4 and 5 drops, and now we have to play Counterbalance. But the meme on the Counterbalance was you needed Counterbalances for the Pirate Stompy mirror.
Amazing.
It was like, how do we tech for the mirror? Counterbalance, obviously.
I think that was like literally the peak of Chalice brewing nonsense, where like you said, you could jam any win condition you wanted with Chalice. And I think that's like faded a lot again because of like stuff like Brazen Bar and Prismatic Ending, because now everyone just kind of like removes it. And like maybe that won't be the case with Expressive Iteration gone now. Like maybe people would do more one drops or whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that's like kind of when I felt like brewing was at its peak for Legacy. And then all these main deck answers to Chalice started happening. Allosaurus Shepherd, not that that's in a lot of decks or anything, but it's kind of like an example of like things that started piling up where Chalice started to lose value in a lot of matchups.
Well, I think that's a good place to end it on Chalice of the Void. But
we need to do an in-depth deck tech on Pirate Stompy.
Yeah, you know, yeah, Phil, Phil, do you want to, next episode, do you come back on? You want to do the Pirate Stompy deck tech? We'll just like lay out the most optimized version in current present day Pirate Stompy.
You know that?
In full pirate cosplay.
Yeah.
Everyone dresses up as a pirate.
It is a deck in pre-modern. So
they gave us the new the blue black one that ETBs and makes a bunch of treasures.
Which one is that?
It's Ramirez de Pietro.
Like the reimagining of, of the pirate. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
We now have a pirate lord.
It's a 4/3. So it's not the best in against the top deck, but it has a really good ETB. So I think that's where the deck has to go.
Yeah. Well, anyhow, Phil, it's been a pleasure having you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's always a blast talking to you guys. And like I said, I've always been like a admirer and listener of what you guys have to say. And keeps legacy interesting. So always love having you guys talk about it.
And we will throw the song just after the outro here. So stick around for the song.
Now that you've made it this far talking about Pirate Stompy and
you can skip
stuff,
it'll play. Now it'll actually play for you. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't gonna play before. Thanks everybody for listening, watching, liking, subscribing, commenting, all that stuff. Do you have any questions for Phil, go ahead and comment them. I will forward them his way.
Also, all of his social information will be in the show notes as well.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a good one, everyone.
I see all the movie stars in their fancy cars and their limousines. Been high in the Rockies, under the evergreens. I know what I'm needing, and I don't want to waste more time. I'm in a New York state of mind.
Slide of mind, I'm in your brain. Gonna change the text of all your planes. Making black men a like rain of filth. Dunking on your deck like my name is Wilt. I'ma get dressed up for Gaia's blessing. Jake's enchanted, iridescent. Donate illusions full of grandeur. Remember when rebels dominate and standard. Pre-modern, popping all these goblins. Discarding lands to mox my diamonds. Porting forests, swamps, and islands. Accumulating all your knowledge. Decree of justice, slice and dice. Wheel and deal some fire ice. Dark writ out, hypnotic specter. Reckless ogre, nut collector. Check out all my circle sections. Name a color, grants protection. Vindicate, wait, force will. Mishra's factory, standing still. Withered, wretch, time, stress, duress. Lenoir, Cephalade, Empress. Lenoir, Elves, and Rothalos. JM, Daytom, Deathstroke, Choke, Provoke. Merchant, Scroll, Arcane, Denial. Bow for Defiled, Mary's Guile. Psycho, Togmar, Crocodile. Pestilence, Scorching, Messiah. Meditate and Frantic Search. Risking Snake, Panic, Clouds, Gate, Unearth. Squeeze, Embrace, Goblin, Nabob. Angry Calvary, my MasterCard, Dodecapod. Voltaic key on tap, Colossus. Karn's unlike a Lee Alliance. Ancestral knowledge, Akroma's vengeance. Natural balance, mana severance. Words of wisdom, Tormod's crypt. Slipstream, eel, contested cliffs. Goblin lackey, horn of greed. Sandstone needle, need for speed. Metal worker, stalking stones. Clone side clone and throne of bone. Thran dynamo, ancient tomb. Fumor, rogue gloom, sacred boon. Verdant force, reanimate. Greater good, invigorate. Careful study, pyroblast, warship boil, smoke and stacks. Norod, tinker, winter orb, forbidden lore, forbid, absorb, ley line, lifeline, there's howling mind, pre-modern hotness, slide of mine. Hey. Pre-modern hotness, slide of mine.
Yo, I'ma need some pre-modern up on this table in front of me. Right now. Right now. Pull out your pre-modern tech. Whoosh. Slinging spells, swinging some Phyrexian fucking dreadnought. Let's go.